381 runs needed for victory or 9 wickets needed for victory. It just depends on which side of the fence you're sitting on. Is it the English side or is it the Indian side? But what we have in front of us is a very, very intriguing day of cricket in Chennai on Tuesday. But right now, we're going to talk about a bizarre passage of play on day 4 in Chennai. Hello and welcome to Hotspot Daily. This is Chetan Narula welcoming you to the show once again with my good friend Daniel Norcross all the way from London. And the bizarre thing that we're going to discuss today is England's non-declaration, 178 all out. They batted 46.3 overs for that. But the amount of time that second innings has taken out from this game, that is going to be talked about depending on how day 5 finishes. Isn't that right, Dan?
Oh, well, yes. I mean, it's very specific passage of time. I don't think that I'd really fault England's approach when they had decided not to enforce a follow-on, out to bat again. All of that made sense. And their approach all the way up to tea made sense, really. Their approach for the first 20 minutes after tea made perfect sense. And then suddenly, when Ollie Pope got out, there was an extraordinary hour. And, you know, let's put it into context. It's an hour and 10 minutes that was making sages and pundits across the world and fans absolutely mind-boggled. I was doing a program for the BBC, and we were receiving messages from across the world, many England fans and Indian fans just couldn't understand it. Because let's try and work out what was happening here. England were trying to set India a target and have enough time to bowl them out. And this had happened because of very good late order resistance from India. So this had squeezed the amount of time left in the game. And they got on at a decent lick around 4 and over. Joe Root again, splendid. When they came out after tea, we were thinking 45 minutes.
Maybe an hour.
But, you know, you're thinking, even though India were quite within their rights and were quite right to do so, we're going to slow the game down. If England had 8 overs, I think they went into tea about 370 ahead and threw the bat 360 ahead. If they threw the bat and went at 6 and over for 8 overs, they'd be up to 420. There's this psychological thing in cricket, isn't there? The highest ever successful fourth innings run chase. And England got to that mark, but how they got there was bizarre. Ollie Pope came out straight after tea and was very positive, was hitting reverse sweeps. We thought, okay, it's on. Then the moment he was out, England's sixth wicket, out came Dominic Bess. And what was really clear was that England's vice-captain was at one end, Jos Buttler. England's captain was on the balcony, dressed in his tracksuit, his training kit, and Dom Bess was kicking balls away from Shahbaz Nadeem, who was, again, perfectly within his rights to bowl negatively into the rough, outside the right-hander's leg stump. And we had stalemate. Not only that, as wickets fell gradually, we saw more and more batters come out. I mean, Jack Leach was the one who showed the most positive intent, dancing down the wicket, hitting the ball over the top. Jack Leach. Jimmy Anderson came out.
James Anderson. And in the first shot he played was a reverse sweep.
Well, actually, I mean, I'll tell you, being a strong watcher of James Anderson, he actually plays that more comfortably than he plays the forward defence. So, in a sense, that is his defensive shot. Then the second ball he faced, and this is when England already had the lead of 419. They'd already gone beyond that point. He then sort of defends, turns the wrists, gets out, caught and bowled, and off they troop. Now, England therefore lost the psychological advantage of declaring, which is always a great thing to do because, you know, it says, even if we lose, it was our choice, if you know what I mean. And it was the approach. Now, obviously, it was deliberate. So the question we need to ask ourselves is, what were England seeking to gain from this? Because they reduced the amount of time they had to bowl at the back end of the day. They reduced, at the same time, the number of overs that India have to score this mammoth 420. So the question I ask you, Chetan, is, does this show a real fear of the likes of Rishabh Pant and Washington Sundar and Virat Kohli and you've got to say Shubman Gill, who are very, you know, fluent batters? Or does it show a supreme confidence that they're going to bowl India out anyway and they want to keep them out of the field for as long as possible? And I'm not sure I really know the answer.
No, I don't know the answer. I mean, you look at the fact that Joe Root and James Anderson were talking about something, and I could only imagine that Anderson was saying, no, you cannot declare. I only play alternative test matches nowadays. I need to bat a second time. it was exceptionally bizarre because the last four English batsmen for 13 runs, they ate up five overs. It's not the runs that matter here. The amount of time that was spent in bowling those five overs and four batsmen coming and going and being dismissed. I mean, yes, the umpires are there to speed up things. Even there was a DRS call, even DRS referral, and it gets delayed. That eats up 5 minutes of your time. So question mark here was about the lack of urgency from England, because any momentum they had was being slowly dissipated. And when we say momentum, because they had a 241 run lead in the morning once they bowled out India for 337. And then, you know, they went about their innings in a nice manner. Joe Root, I mean, he played really well to score those runs. But now come to, again, that question that you asked. I don't know. Of course, they would want to consider Rohit Sharma, Shubman Gill, both at the top of the order. They want to consider Cheteshwar Pujara because he can hold up one end. And then, of course, Rishabh Pant. And what he did at Brisbane was magical. And
In the first innings.
Yeah, he's in superb form. He's carrying a lot of confidence. So you want a Rohit Sharma proof and Shubman Gill proof and a Rishabh Pant proof score. And we have not even talked about Rahane and Virat Kohli yet. So it was a bizarre approach. The only way I can justify it is England, having batted for so long on that pitch, know that the pitch, despite the odd ball bouncing and the odd ball turning and odd ball keeping low, despite the rough, the craters that have been created, the pitch, the center of the pitch is still good enough for batting, that a set batsman can still score runs on it. And they just wanted a target which, according to them at least, is beyond India's reach. And especially if you look at the way India started, Shubman Gill and Rohit, they added 25 runs of 28 balls. And for a moment, it looked like India would go to stumps at 50 for no loss before a superb bowl by Jack Leach, bowled Rohit Sharma, ended that thought. It hangs in the balance, doesn't it, Dan?
Yeah, it's so difficult, isn't it, to work out precisely where they're coming from here. It's very difficult to get the ball away safely. We saw that. I mean, England tried to score runs quickly, and when they did, everybody other than Joe Root really, really struggled. You know, there are a lot of very fine stroke makers there who are all struggling. Shabazz Naidoo bowling into the patches outside the right-hand leg stump made it extremely difficult. I think England also think that if they've got a mammoth total on the board, they can afford to keep fielders in. And in the event of India getting away or having a session and a half that's good, or Rishabh Pant smashing it to all parts, they've still got leeway to be able to, you know, drag it back by bowling negatively. I suppose that is the thinking. It doesn't really stop us from sort of thinking, though, that the manner in which they went about that particular 45 minutes was just slightly bewildering, because there wasn't really an attempt to move the game on. It seemed to be about time. It seemed to be about minimizing the amount of time in a way that England were out there on the field. And so England maybe also thinking about having two bites with a new ball, a hard new ball, fresh in the evening, not having to be out there for too long, and then fresh again the next morning. It could be all those sorts of things. Time's going to tell, isn't it? We're going to be in for an absolutely cracking fifth day. And it may well work out for England. It's going to be crucial how their seamers bowl. It's going to be crucial how the off-spinner bowls, because although you're right in saying that for the most part the pitch is playing okay, we are seeing a bit of bounce. We're seeing a bit of turn for the off-spinner into the right-hander, which brings that mode of dismissal in, which will really be pleasing to Joe Root. And also, we did see at the end of the day, the wicket of Rohit Sharma. I mean, I'm afraid if Jack Leach bowls that ball to anybody, Virat Kohli, Steve Smith, pretty much anybody, that's getting you out, because it's turned past the outside edge.
Yeah, because they're playing for the straight line. Even the 2-3 deliveries that he's bowled, they're playing for the straight line, and it's just that one is just turning a bit and just going past the outside edge, and they're not.
And that is the pitch.
Yeah, that is the pitch. So, like I said,
The odd ball, yes, it's turning. The odd ball is keeping up and down. Jofra Archer with the new ball will be a totally different entity. A lot of time still remaining in that particular sense, but a lot of time was also wasted. The other thing, perhaps, that England also watched out against was if they attack too much and they get bowled out, let's say, yes, they've scored 178, but what if they got 158? I mean, they would still have 400 on the board, but India would have had four sessions to bat, which is a lot of time to score those runs. So there's this calculation that has gone on in the English dressing room that has bewildered a lot of people, and a lot of different takes are on there. But we have to keep in mind that it was only a day ago that 395 was chased down in Bangladesh. Kyle Mayer's 210 on debut. And also one of our colleagues tweeted about the fact that Joe Root once in county cricket set 471 to win for Middlesex and lost the match. And since then, he was called Crapton. Mind you, that match would have been a four-day game, not even a five-day game. So this is...
Well, I'll give you another example, Stephen. I'll give you another example. At Headingley, against the West Indies, a few years back, Joe Root declared and lost the game. And those kind of things do scar you. There's no doubt about it. In the list of captains, though, of modern captains, his declaration average target is pretty much slap bang in the middle. Kohli's is a little ahead. He tends to average about 410, 415. Root averages about 402. And what I would definitely say is that we're pundits. We've been around those press boxes many, many times. And it's interesting, isn't it, how the pundits are all for declaring about an hour and a half earlier than the captains.
That's why we're pundits and not captains, aren't we? Interesting that you mentioned that, because I asked Virat Kohli once about his declaration, and he says, and he said that, you know, I'm declaring at 450, 420, 450, because with those many runs behind my back, I know that the opposition batting cannot win the game. So that takes one outcome out of the picture, and then we are either playing for a draw or a win. He didn't want to talk about a tie. So we are either playing for a draw and a win, and the other team is just trying to get a draw or escape the loss. So they're not playing for a win, and it allows my bowlers to be on the attack all the time. And I think we have to look at it from that perspective. Will England attack all the time on day five? And alternatively, can India go for the target or not?
Well, indeed. I mean, in English county cricket for years and years, it used to be a three-day game. And so what used to happen frequently was that the carrot was dangled in order to get your opponent to go for it on that last day, because that gave you a greater chance of taking wickets. That's not the approach that England have taken here.
Exactly.
And it's not the approach that test match captains take. So, you know, I'm not going to be overly critical of this, because we've seen it. It's the way of the world. The issue will become at the end, because at the end of this match, If India are 7-8, I mean, you probably don't think their tail will be able to last if they're 8-9 down. But Jasprit Bumrah is a slightly better batsman than he was. Who knows? And if we get to that situation, then of course, what I think England fans fear most of all is that, having come into this series as massive underdogs, to have found themselves in a surprising position of dominance throughout this Test match, are they about to blow their best chance of putting huge pressure on India in the series? I think the England team will look at it very differently and say, well, yes, it will be a massive disappointment if they don't get home from here, but we've dominated the game for 3.5-4 days, and that'll make them feel extremely confident about the challenges yet to come. So you've got these competing anxieties that flow through fans, pundits, and players.
Well, before we come to the inevitable question, we just need to talk about one name. And you mentioned the Indian tail batting. I think Ishan Sharma is a good enough batsman in the Indian tail as well. But today we need to talk about his bowling just a bit. 300 test wickets, only the third Indian pacer to get to that mark after Kapil Dev and Zahir Khan. Daniel, the way the world of cricket sees Ishan Sharma is somebody that he started off well, then in the middle phase, he just lagged behind, and suddenly he's got a second or third wind in his career where he's justifying the fact that he's taken 300 wickets and that the fact that he's just two tests away from a 100 test match appearance. So what is your take on Ishan Sharma? How have you seen, like I said, I mean, it's not just the world of cricket. I mean, that includes how Indian cricket fans see Ishan Sharma today.
Well, I first encountered him at, it would be Lords in 2010, and he was walking around the boundary. I don't think he was playing in the game, but he was walking around the boundary. He was with the touring party, and he was this really tall, stringy, beanpole young man with incredible hair, and he didn't look like an Indian fast bowler. He was really a sort of portent of things to come. I mean, that man, that stringy young man, has turned into a really impressive specimen, filled out physical specimen. He has so much more power now. When he first began, like every fast bowler, he was trying to find his way. And when he first began his career, bowling quick in India was a bit more of a thankless task than it's become. I think he has been part of shaping a whole new era of Indian fast bowlers and making fast bowling a genuinely potent part of an Indian bowling attack's armory, which it didn't used to be. Also, you know, I think we talked about a little bit in our preview that the early to middle part of his career, the Indian fans tearing their hair out about Ishant, in a similar fashion to England fans tearing their hair out about James Anderson, hard to believe, but way back in the early part of his career. And in the last 20 test matches or so, he's proved what experience does, what physicality also brings.
Yeah, he's
game.
Become
and
a
he's
lot
a
fitter.
Truly impressive, massively impressive guy now.
Yeah, absolutely. He's got a lot fitter. And, you know, the way he's bowled, he's attacking the stumps all the time with that particular line and length. And if you go overseas now, any foreign trip, he becomes a massive part of the Indian bowling attack. And when he was injured for this Australian tour, of course, it turned out in victory for India. But when he was ruled out of that Australian tour, a massive groan went across the Indian cricket fandom because they know the value of Ishant Sharma. He could bowl all through the day. And from the other end, you have somebody like a Shami or a Bumrah or an Ashwin attacking. So that is the importance of Ishant Sharma. And again, I remember him through that middle stage where everybody thought of him as the leader of the attack because he had played so many matches, 50, 60, 70 matches, where the others like Bhuvneshwar Kumar and Mohammad Shami and Umesh Yadav, they were just at the start of their career, 10, 15 test matches. And everybody assigned him as the leader of the group. But his bowling or his bowling attack thinking was not like the leader of the group. He was more like he was part of the pack because they were all trying to grow together because he was of the similar age of these bowlers, 28, 29, 30. He started playing a long time ago at 21, 22, and he's become that bowler because he's played so much cricket. And it's been fascinating the way his journey has progressed. And of course, he deserves all the accolades for having picked up those 300 test wickets. Right, we come to the final question of today's episode then. And it is the obvious question. India, can they do it? 381 runs. I'll go first because I'll leave the 9 wickets question to Daniel. I think India will go with a similar strategy with what they have done in Brisbane. They have a ready-made example of one test ago that they did it. Maybe a bit different pitch. Day 5 in Brisbane is still good for batting, as Rishabh Pant showed. But obviously, the class of the Australian bowling attack was different as well. If India can get till tea time with 320 on the board or 300 on the board with Rishabh Pant still at the crease with somebody like a Rahane or a Pujara or even Virat Kohli, I think they might make a go for it. It's again going to be the same strategy, bat around Cheteshwar Pujara and see where they are placed at tea. But knowing this Indian team, like I said, they will make a go for it if they are in a good position at tea time.
They've got the strongest batting lineup that you could wish for in conditions that they are used to and aware of. But you have to say that England hold all the cards. So if England let India get into a position where they might win, you suspect that it'll be because of pretty poor English bowling. England's attack is quite well suited to this fifth day, you would think. They've got a tall, fast bowler in Archer who can attack those areas that Ishant and Bumrah were attacking. They've got a bowl-it-dry bowler in James Anderson, who can bowl it tight, wicket to wicket. On occasion, he's almost bowling like fast cutters, faster cutters, which is sort of making him almost like an extra off-spinner. In Ben Stokes, who we haven't seen really in this match.
Too much.
England do use him when they get into a sort of panicky situation. He's got the reverse swing option. If India get away from them, there's the option to bowl into the footmarks for Leach. Bess, I think, is going to be a very important bowler, as I mentioned earlier, into those areas. England have got it all in their hands here to take a 1-0 lead. They
They'll feel that they really ought to. India, by the same token, approved what they can do in fourth innings twice recently in India, so in Australia. So they've got a kind of muscle memory of success at the back end. It's just going to make for an enthralling day's cricket one way or the other, isn't it? What I will predict is India aren't going to get rolled over and this be done by tea. I think you need to prepare yourselves, ladies and gentlemen, to be absorbed till after tea. This could go down to the wire. It could be a nail biter. Every game in this year, 2021, has been ludicrously exciting. So why is it going to stop now?
It's payback for all our suffering in the year 2020. We've been blessed with brilliant, brilliant test cricket in 2021, whether it's India, Australia, or Sri Lanka, England, or now India, England. What it's done is set up an enthralling day five. We could not be more excited. Cannot wait. That's the end of today's episode. Hopefully you will join us tomorrow with plenty more to talk about. There is no doubt about that. In the meantime, for now, it's me, Chetan Narula, and Daniel Nowcross saying goodbye.
Goodbye.